South Dakota Public Broadcasting, sdpb.org.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Quorum being present, we will call to order this meeting of the Senate Committee on Health and Human Services. The secretary will call the roll.
Dempster?
Here.
Gant? Gerstad?
Here.
Merchant?
Here.
Miles?
Here.
Hansen? Adelstein?
Here. Seeing that a quorum is present, the meeting will commence. For the first order of business, I'd like a motion to approve the minutes that you've all received.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor of of accepting them as offered, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are adopted. The next order of business before we start the testimony on bills for the day is the governor's presented to us and a bill which he would like to have us put on the docket. This is an act to revise the provisions for the risk pool to allow uninsurable children to enroll and to provide for additional funding. Moved by Senator Dempster that we put this on the docket.
Second.
Second by Senator Merchant. The secretary call the roll.
Dempster?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Gerstad?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Miles?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Okay.
Aye. It's aye.
This having been approved by unanimous vote of committee,
I'll up to speed.
Sign wherever it is I sign, and I'll deliver it to the desk immediately following this one. We'll now proceed to the order of business. The first item of business is Senate Bill 72 to make an appropriation to initiate a Master of Social Work degree program in higher education. I might tell the committee that it is the plan to discuss this bill and move it one way or another as a recommendation to the Appropriations Committee and send it on to them. I recognize the Senator Pro Tem, Senator Bob Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Bob Gray, State Senator from District 24, Hughes, Stanley, and Sully Counties. By way of introduction, I also want to include that I'm also the president of Capillary Counseling Service here in Pierre, and so this is related to my role there as well. Many of you are familiar with this issue and with this bill. We've discussed it in past sessions, at least individually amongst various legislators. Really what we have here is a workforce issue. There's a shortage of master's trained social work professionals in South Dakota, and many what I think many of us don't realize is that our hospitals, our long-term care facilities, our mental health agencies all need these professionals. Many years ago, we also talked about, I think it was 2001, 2002 was very popular, we talked about the brain drain. Well, this is one of those examples where South Dakota does not have an MSW program in any one of their universities. And so what happens is those students that want to pursue this degree go out of state, and many of them often go down a different path after that. And we don't get them back to our agencies here in South Dakota. Why do I think this is important? Obviously, the workforce issue, the brain drain issue. But when we look at the governor's budget and we look at helping people, and this is what this committee is about, we spend a lot of our state resources, state and federal funds, on helping people, on the social services, human services, and that's precisely what this bill is about. Now, I'm not going to take a lot of your time today. We have a lot of people here that will offer expert testimony and offer their experiences within their agencies. I recognize that money is tight this year. We all do. We have a big deficit we're trying to make up. I would ask that you consider this and ultimately move it over to appropriations to be considered with the rest of the budget. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Kitty Kinsman, and she's going to offer a few remarks as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, please. Paige, would you pass those out? By the way, I may remind everyone who will be testifying today to sign in so we have an accurate name for the minutes. And in case someone forgot, please turn off cell phones.
Thank you, Chairman Adelstein. My name is Kitty Kinsman. I'm a registered lobbyist for the National Association of Social Workers South Dakota Chapter, and I'm pleased to be here before the committee this morning to talk about this important workforce issue. As Senator Gray stated, this issue has been in discussion with the legislature for at least a few years, and it was really last year in appropriations and with some other lawmakers that the conversation about scoping the need for master's prepared social workers really needed to happen. And the NASW took on that challenge to do a workforce assessment to try and help scope the nature of the problem and the needs of employers. And what you have in summary in the packets that I've distributed to you is really the summary of that workforce assessment and the statement of employer needs. Today you're going to hear about the challenges that employers face across the state with respect to recruiting and recruiting MSWs in a variety of settings, and also what they're doing to get by in the meantime. And you're also going to hear about the proposal that was developed in concert with NASW and the Board of Regents to address that workforce need here in South Dakota. Before I yield my time, I would be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to thank the Department of Labor and the Department of Health for their help in helping us understand the workforce needs, and to the many employers who aren't here today but whose letters of support are in the core packet to the committee and the list of letters in all of your packets, who responded to the surveys and provided letters of support to the proposal that was in the region's budget but is obviously not now currently in the proposed governor's budget. I also want to take this opportunity to thank the University of South Dakota, Dr. Rod Perry and Dr. Katz, and also the Board of Regents, Dr. Tad Perry and Paul Goff, who you'll hear from in a few short minutes, for their work in developing what we think is an appropriate program for South Dakota, given our geography and employment needs. We think Senate Bill 72 represents a great start, and we hope to be able to continue this conversation with you and your fellow lawmakers in appropriations. I think with that, I will yield my time to the people in the field who can really talk to you about what social workers do and why South Dakota needs more of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kinsman. But I have other proponents for Senate Bill 72, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this morning. My name is Dennis Frimmer. I'm the current president of the National Association of Social Workers in South Dakota. I'm also a registered lobbyist for that same organization. I want to spend a little time talking with you about what social workers do and the importance that they have in helping South Dakotans meet the challenges that come with families and getting older and social services, all kinds of human services, child welfare, protecting children. Social workers are involved in lots of different settings, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a bit. Social workers assist individuals, groups, and communities to restore or enhance their capacity for social functioning while creating conditions favorable to those goals. The practice of social work requires knowledge of human development and behavior, social and economic, cultural institutions, and interaction of all of these factors together. So it's not merely just understanding an individual and finding out what their strengths and challenges are, but it's really understanding a broader picture of how that person interrelates with their world. According to the Department of Labor, the profession of social work is projected to increase by 30% by 2010. So it's a considerable workforce issue in South Dakota. There are many challenges awaiting new social workers in South Dakota. Social workers are highly trained and experienced professionals. Only those people who have earned an accredited degree have completed a required field practicum and have taken licensure examinations are considered professional social workers. In the past, all of us are aware that many people call themselves social workers. By history, that's very true. But since the 70s in South Dakota and earlier than that elsewhere, there have been standards set for who is a social worker and who can call themselves a social worker legally. Social workers help people overcome some of life's most difficult challenges: poverty, discrimination, abuse, addiction, physical illness, divorce, loss, unemployment, educational problems, disability, and mental illness are just a few. They help prevent crisis, and they counsel individuals, families, groups, and communities to meet the ever-changing demands of life. Professional social workers are found in every facet of community life. You find social workers in schools and nursing homes and hospitals and mental health centers, addiction treatment agencies, child welfare agencies, many, many places social workers practice. I'll give you a list of those just so that you have a sense of the breadth of what social workers are trained to do. Mental health therapy, disaster relief, military social work, rural social work, community mental health, employee assistance. There are many social workers who engage in private practice on their own. Adoption and foster care, child welfare services, family preservation services, homeless family assistance, eating disorders, genetics, hospital social work, crisis intervention, school violence, hospice and palliative care, depression, institutional care, chronic pain, outpatient treatment, developmental disabilities, international social work, advocacy consulting and planning, veteran services, child abuse and neglect, domestic violence, political development, parent education, family planning, HIV/AIDS, school alternative programs, difficulties in school, gerontology services, community-based services, in-home services, senile dementia and Alzheimer's, addictions, prevention and treatment, criminal justice, housing assistance, public welfare, and employment services. So the list is quite long. From that list, you can imagine the number of social workers needed in South Dakota. And without a master's program to prepare these individuals, it's very difficult to fill the need that we have. It's been estimated that social workers provide the majority of mental health services, just mental health services in this country. Social workers provide many other services, but just in mental health, I've heard upwards of 60% of all mental health services are provided by social workers. There are more social workers providing mental health services than psychiatrists, psychologists, and psychiatric nurses combined. But that's not true in South Dakota. We don't have those same numbers here. The Red Cross says 40% of all of their folks that they've trained for disaster mental health response are social workers. In a few minutes, you'll hear testimony from employers about the difficulty in recruiting and retaining master's level social workers. And I'm here testifying on behalf of the National Association of Social Workers, but I also want you to know that I'm an employer. I'm the CEO at Capital Area Counseling here in Pierre, and we serve a eight-county area in central South Dakota. We, too, have a recruiting and retention problem for MSWs. It's very tough to find qualified people to fill the need to meet the service demands of the folks in central South Dakota. We know that when people leave the state to get their graduate education and they have their field practicum, their field placement out of state, oftentimes those people never return. It's true with all health care. I think that there's evidence that when doctors do their residencies elsewhere, they tend to stay elsewhere. So we see the same thing in social work. Once someone leaves the state to pursue a graduate education, too often that's the last time we see them. There are many contributing factors to this issue. One of the workforce issues that we're having is many of us that are professional social workers were trained more than 20 years ago, and we're aging out of the profession. We're looking at retirement, and there isn't a sufficient number of people to even replace us, let alone meet the increasing demand of the human service demand across the state. The other point I'd like to make is that the state of South Dakota, through the Division of Mental Health at the Department of Human Services and the Department of Social Services, Department of Corrections, Unified Judicial System, and others, have come together and adopted a new way of providing services to kids and families, and what that model is called is System of Care. And I just wanted to mention that System of Care is a philosophy and a structure for providing services to kids and families in a way that's proven very effective elsewhere, and it's been adopted here in South Dakota. And the point I wanted to make is that because of the way that that's structured, social workers are actually a very good fit for that model of providing services that the state has already adopted and is beginning to implement. We wish it, in the mental health system at least, that more master's level social workers would be available for us to plug into that system of care approach and meet the needs of those kids and families. I also want to take a minute to thank the South Dakota Board of Regents. They've been partners with us in this effort. We have talked with them about what our needs are, and they've understood and they've heard the information. They've seen the information that you have in front of you as well. And unfortunately, the request was, it didn't make it out of, you know, into the governor's proposed budget. But we're here to let you know that the need has not gone away. The need is here today, and the need is going to be greater next year and the year after. So I'll end my testimony by just saying, on behalf of the National Association of Social Workers, we ask for your support in moving this initiative forward. We need a master's level of social work in South Dakota. We're the only state in the United States that doesn't have one, and that's going to cost us in the future. It's going to cost the citizens of South Dakota because they're not going to be able to receive all the services that they're going to need. I also might mention that one of the problems that I see, I think we're on a collision course in South Dakota with the aging population that we have and the number of services that our aging population will need that actually require the assistance of master's level social workers. So as the baby boomers reach retirement and begin to experience those later stages in life, social workers are going to be even in more demand. Thank you for your time, and I'll be glad to stand by for any questions that you have.
Can I see a show of hands to see how many other plan to speak on as proponents of this bill? Thank you. Will there be any opponents speaking this morning? Okay. Very good. That gives us about six more people, seven. I would appreciate it if those who testify further could hold their remarks to 5 minutes and avoid repeating what someone else has said. Please, proponents, come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Dwayne Majors, and I'm the Executive Director of Community Counseling Services, which is one of the 11 community mental health centers across the state of South Dakota. Community Counseling Services serves seven counties in east central South Dakota. We have full-time clinics in Huron and in Madison. We Community Counseling Services employs 65 full-time employees, and of that 65 employees, only two of those employees are MSWs, not because that's the way that we want it, but we have such difficulty in recruiting MSWs. The two people that I have on staff that are MSWs, one moved to South Dakota with her family from North Dakota, where she was trained and got her MSW. Our second MSW is a young lady who works for us in Madison, and due to her location on the east edge of the state, was able to drive to the Twin Cities on weekends to get her MSW while she was working full-time. And I currently have three bachelor's level employees who are very desperately wanting to get graduate training and would prefer that their graduate training would be in Masters of Social Work, but they are unable to, you know, to do the drive from here on, and so they are currently looking at other graduate programs to get their training. I've been in my position as an administrator for 25 years, and during all of that time, it has been very, very difficult to recruit MSWs. The largest number of MSWs we've ever had on staff at one time is four, and I lost MSW a year ago to the Veterans Administration, who's recruiting MSWs very strongly, and I'm unable to compete with their salaries. But the reason that our MSWs are so important to us as a mental health center are that social workers, particularly MSWs, are uniquely trained to provide services in home-based situations. Our service delivery system as a community mental health center has changed dramatically over the last 10 years in that where we used to be an office-based where people would come into our clinic to receive services, we now go out into the communities to serve children and families in home-based services where we can see what's actually going on in the home, mentor families, and provide that treatment right in the home-based setting, in a natural setting. Similarly, with individuals with serious and persistent mental illness, our goal is to help them function within the community, and so we are in the community doing that. And again, MSWs are uniquely trained to provide these services in those kinds of settings. And the last point I would make is that MSWs are one of three behavioral health professionals that are providers for Medicare. Medicare recognizes MSWs as a provider. And with only two MSWs, it really hinders our ability to provide services, particularly to the elderly, and to the disabled that have Medicare as their source of payment. And so with that, I will end my presentation. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Other proponents, please. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Alan Solano, and I am the CEO of Behavior Management Systems, one of the 11 community mental health centers in South Dakota. And I do want to thank you for allowing me the time to address you today on what I think is a very important issue for my company and South Dakota. To give you a brief background of Behavior Management Systems, we have 10 counties in western South Dakota that is part of our catchment area. That covers a little over 20,000 square miles. We have a staff of 167, of which 47 of those personnel are master's prepared professionals. As Dwayne had indicated, in the Community Mental Health Center, most of our work is community-based, and as such, we provide the traditional therapy, but it is also a lot of the care coordination that we do. Many of our clients have the financial, vocational, needs, medical needs, that we would help coordinate that care, ensuring that they have the linkage and access necessary to keep them within our communities. I believe an MSW program in South Dakota will greatly improve my ability to recruit for such positions. This is going to be increasingly important as we move towards a recovery model, system of care model of care, and away from the medical models. And my ability to recruit personnel right now is hampered by the need to look at schools and individuals that are outside of South Dakota. Now, we've taken on a grow-your-own stance in behavior management systems. And what I mean by that is I have a number of bachelor's prepared professionals that have the skills and the motivation needed to go back and obtain their master's degree. But for the most part, they're faced with that decision of attending school in South Dakota for counseling or going outside of South Dakota for social work. And as you can imagine, the choice of attending school outside of South Dakota causes great challenges for that employee, for their families, and for me as the employer. To give you some examples, I have an employee currently who drives each week to attend school in Billings, Montana. 2 years ago, I had one employee that took a one-year educational leave so that they could go to Denver, Colorado to obtain that degree. In both cases, and in others in the past, I've agreed to support those employees, both through time off of work so that they could pursue that educational time, but also in making an investment towards their educational costs. And I must say, I would much rather make that investment in South Dakota. As Dwayne talked and Denny talked, you know, the aging of our population is a real issue, and the Medicare eligibility is critical. And not to repeat what they've talked about, what I'm seeing is that this need for the Medicare eligible providers is greatly magnified as you look in smaller communities. So as I look in Rapid City, I have providers that are master's prepared, but as I look to the smaller communities in my catchment area, that becomes more and more of a challenge, and that's going to grow as our baby boomers reach that Medicare eligible age. Lastly, I just want to bring forward that as part of my organization, both of my program directors are social workers. Both are within 5 years of retirement. As such, I began a very aggressive career pathing with our employees to try to build that internal resource that I'm going to need in the next 5 years. And having qualified social workers in South Dakota from a program in South Dakota, I believe is going to be critical to help me meet this need. So with that, I want to thank you again for allowing me this time.
Sure. Thank you very much for your testimony and for your driving all the way from balmy Rapid City to the Winter and Pier.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Terry Dosh. I'm here today in my role as Executive Director of the South Dakota Council of Mental Health Centers. You just heard from three of my directors. And it's been said that there are 11 community mental health centers that serve South Dakota. To make it relevant to you, you know, some of my other members would include Southeastern Behavioral Health Care in Sioux Falls and East Central Mental Health Center and Chemical Dependency Center in Brookings. Our venue is community-based behavioral health care services. The big bulk of the work that we do is directed to addressing people that it's South Dakota's responsibility to care for, adults with severe and persistent mental illness, and children with serious emotional disturbances or disorders. We do that on a community outpatient basis, and I think that the need that was described to you this morning by Mr. Frimmer, Mr. Solano, and Mr. Majors, applies throughout our entire system. So I wanted to make their comments relevant throughout. I also think it's important to cross-connect what you hear today with what you've heard and what you might hear yet this session. Now, I would point out that when on the 21st of January, when Secretary Hofer visited with you, you asked him to highlight what you thought five challenges facing South Dakota were. And you'll recall, you know, that one of those challenges was increasing demand for the services that the Department of Human Services pays for. I think in the area of mental health services, he outlined an increase of 7% in mental health services alone. So that increasing demand. He also told you about the workforce issues that his agency and the private provider community are experiencing right now. He also told you about the burgeoning demand for services at the Human Services Center, the emphasis on hospital care. And I would like to suggest that an emphasis on addressing some of this need more fully on an outpatient basis can help ameliorate that. And then he also talked to you about the challenges of implementing new brands of care, new models of care. He talked to you about the systems of care model that we're in the process of implementing in partnership with the department right now, which is heavily dependent upon movement from a medical model to more of a social model, and the addressal of individuals with more complicated co-occurring disorders. In my mind, this bill is relevant to that, too. In fact, I would say it's also relevant to the information you've heard expressed by Secretary Bowman of the Department of Social Services with respect to how do we deal with the need of our growing elderly population, and I won't say more about that except to say that community-based alternatives is a big component of what that study was all about. And having community-based resources, I think, is really important. And then lastly, being able to take care of our people without reliance on hospitalization, incarceration, more expensive out-of-community or out-of-state placements is also a solution to controlling budget. And so I just want to take this opportunity to try to make this legislation relevant as we enter into those discussions and as we remember past discussions as well. The last thing I wanted to say is one of the things that would really intrigue me about a program like this, something I'm a personal advocate for, is that this be a more or less of a hybrid program once it's implemented that would allow people who already have their bachelor's degree in social work to upgrade their credentialing. That's really important to our system. You know, I have centers that serve really rural areas of the state. Southern Plains Behavioral Health Services located down at Winter and Three Rivers up in Lemon. Once they get good hands, they like to hang on to them. And being able to help upgrade while they're on the job, their credentialing is really important. So I think that that's a piece of this that would really intrigue me. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing my testimony this morning. I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you very much. Another proponent, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Paul Marceau, Vice President of Human Resources at St. Mary's Healthcare Center in Pierre. You've heard a lot of testimony this morning on behalf of this, and I just want to bring the reality to the local level in regards to hospitals, nursing homes, and those type of areas. I've been at St. Mary's for about 20 years, and in that time, when I started, we had a master's degree social worker there. He retired. Since that time, I've hired two. And now for the last 7.5 years, I've had zero MSWs in our organization. With that, we've had to, fortunately, have the ability to contract with our capillary counseling associates here in town for services to maintain that social work level for our kidney dialysis, hospice, home health care programs. Now, that's a great opportunity for us. However, it does create a little bit more of a costly business venture when you contract those services. And it also, really the primary thing is that we really lose the amount of time we can have a social worker in our facility. So we contract for maybe 12 to 15 hours a month, when in fact, if we had a master's degree social worker, we had a full-timer with more flexibility, more patient care time, and those are the things we really need to work with our bachelor's degree folks and so forth. We have bachelor's degree individuals on board, and like other people have spoke here, they would love to go on and get that master's degree. And unfortunately, the cost of doing that, the time of being away from home, going to another state, just doesn't work out. So having something in South Dakota would be a great opportunity for us. I look at the physical therapy program. I've had an opening for 2 years, but now I've got two students from Pierre who are graduating this year from the University of South Dakota who I'm interviewing. And that's a huge success for that type of program. I think you'll see the same thing with the master's degree program. I urge you to consider this a pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Sam Wilson, a registered lobbyist for AARP in South Dakota. I would like to associate myself with many of the comments that have already been made about our state's aging population. And without having to tread over the same ground again, I think one thing that I would make note of, particularly in the realm of home and community-based services, is that all of you as committee members heard Secretary Bowman's presentation about the costs of serving our aging population over the next 15 to 20 years. And in those presentations, she made the observation that according to projections, in three options that the state was presented by a study that was contracted by the state, the state would be able to save over $50 million over the next 15 to 20 years in long-term care services if we move towards a more home and community-based model. Masters of Social Work individuals are part of that $50 million savings solution for the state of South Dakota. It is those home and community-based services that they provide, whether it be helping to organize transportation services, whether it be coordinating home-based services for individuals in need, and also as well in just coordinating long-term care in general, whether it be in the nursing home or an assisted living facility. All of those tie together in not only providing an adequate level of care for our state's aging population, but also at a significant cost savings, excuse me, to those institutional types of care that we currently are utilizing in the state of South Dakota. So with that, I would ask you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think there was an additional proponent.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Paul Goff, Director of Policy and Planning for the Board of Regents. The university had intended to send Brian Katz, and he is unable to be here because of illness, so I'm going to revise my remarks to drop items that have already been said and say a little bit about the university's process to develop the program. The Board of Regents supports state and industry efforts for workforce development. The Board has been involved in the Healthcare Workforce Initiative. The board has been involved in the governor's workforce 2025 initiative. So broadly speaking, the board is supporting state and industry efforts to develop the state's workforce. I have some information for you from the board's agenda materials, and there were additional background information, and I'll get that to what I'm distributing is the board agenda materials from December, and that will provide some background so we don't have to go over it here today. Licensure as a certified social worker requires a doctorate or a master's degree from a school of social work accredited by the Council on Social Work Education. So accreditation and the specific accrediting body is already in state law. Okay. The requirements for independent practice of social work requires includes licensure as a certified social worker. So the two license categories in South Dakota require a master's or a doctoral degree from a social work school accredited by the school Council on Social Work Education. The board's budget request to the governor included $474,500 in continuing funds for a new program at the University of South Dakota. The university developed the program proposal very rapidly after the board's budget request was approved in August. I want to thank the university and compliment the university for their rapid action to develop the proposal. The university had discussions with the Council on Social Work Education and also consulted with other existing programs to determine the best way to put the program together. The program went through the same board process as other graduate degree programs. We did have an external review in late September. We had the chair from the University of Montana program here for a day. to examine the program. His report was provided to the board, and it is in the materials that you just received. The board approved the university's proposal in December with implementation contingent on identification of resources and with the understanding that no new students would be admitted in the first fiscal year of funding. First fiscal year would be devoted to hiring the faculty and to begin the process for approval by the Council of Social Work Education. This is not a simple process. It does require careful planning, and it does require meeting the accrediting agency's timelines. The program is designed to accommodate students with a bachelor's degree in social work. Those students would have a 36 credit hour program. It is also designed to serve people with undergraduate degrees in other disciplines. Those people would have a 60 credit hour program. So I want to follow up on the comments made earlier that the university has developed a program that will allow people with a bachelor's degree in social work to finish faster, but it also provides opportunities for students with degrees in other disciplines who've changed their minds and decide that they now want to become social workers. So the university's program has accommodated both groups of people. The social work accreditation requirements call for universities to establish a face-to-face traditional program first. I mean, you cannot get permission to do a distance program until you first get approval of your traditional program. So the university is following the accreditation guidelines, which are required by state law. Long term, I think the university would be interested in seeking board approval to deliver the program by distance. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any other proponents? Are there any proponents? Are there any representatives here today from Bishop Supich? Then we'll add to the record, in addition to the letters that we have now, a letter from the bishop to me as chairman, recommending the passage. And we'll also add to the record these supporting documents that we have had in terms of the proponent's position. Now we'll hear from opponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Liza Sizer, and I'm with the Bureau of Finance and Management. I rise in opposition to this bill strictly because of the lack of financial resources in the state at this time. I'd stand by for questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're brave to face the balance. There are no further proponents or opponents, we'll close the committee to a public presentation and open for questions from the committee. Senator Gerstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was quite a convincing testimony. I guess I was already convinced, having been lobbied by many, many, many folks during this year about the social work program, and I think it's a much needed program in our state. We, as South Dakota, have again another record of not having, being the only state not to have something. And also, since I've been connected with Good Samaritan for about 40 years and have served on the board for the last six and have worked with disabled in my community, I know the tremendous functions that are provided and needs that are addressed by social workers, master social workers. And then, of course, in these tough economic times and with all the demands on our budget, where do we come up with the money? I do have four questions, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to present them individually?
Yes, please.
First question is, has anybody talked to the private schools in the state about their ability to come forward with the program?
Who, you drag this to anyone specific?
Or anybody that wants to come up. I don't know who the appropriate person would be.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gerstead, I know there have been conversations in the past with the University of Sioux Falls about the possibility of starting that program. I think as they've explored
developing the program. The costs of moving that forward have been an obstacle to their discussions. I cannot speak for their current status, but I know that that has been a discussion in the past. I'm not aware of any other program development. There are three private bachelor's programs in the state, three private, Presentation, Oglala, and University of Sioux Falls.
I would encourage, you know, further exploration of that. And then question, has anyone explored applying for grants for this kind of an educational situation? You know, there are lots of national grants out there, and I'm just wondering in terms of funding if that's been explored.
That is under exploration, and clearly with the budget challenges being faced not only by states but by our federal government and by many of the granting organizations, that's looking a little less promising than it might have in the past.
Just a quick follow-up there. You know, I would encourage that as well, having been associated with foundations. There's 3,200 of them that are small that, you know, are standing by with lots of money. And lastly, what is the pay level for Master of Social Work in this state, and how does it compare with other states?
Actually, I would probably, Mr. Chairman, defer that question to perhaps one of our employers or perhaps to Mr. Dosh, who may have a broader perspective on that. Thank you.
Please, if you'd come forward. Thank you very much, Mr.
Chairman. Senator Gerstad, to start, let me just speak on behalf of Behavior Management Systems. Our minimum right now for a master's prepared person is 30,000. Social workers that come into the system come in at a bit of a premium. For our organization, that's usually a couple thousand dollars more. Licensure in social work is really where they would start being able to increase that salary availability. Now, how does that compare to other states? What I can say is that 2 years ago when I had sent my one employee that went to Denver, Colorado, what she was instructed at that time was that she should expect about a $40,000 annual salary, and I agree that would be excellent. The reality in South Dakota is that in our reimbursement model, that is very difficult for somebody coming out of school to obtain that. And if you can give me just a moment, I do have a survey that was conducted by the South Dakota Council of Community Mental Health Centers that I can identify for you fairly quickly what the average wage has been. Actually, I'm not going to be able to. The printer has cut off the position description, so I would not be able to tell you that I'm on the right position, so I apologize for that.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Hans.
You mentioned reimbursement model. Could you expand on that a little bit? Is this the Medicare reimbursement and is there a differential between what you as a South Dakota provider can receive compared to a Colorado provider or some other state?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
Thank you. The model that I speak of is that through the 11 community mental health centers, that our rates of reimbursement are established through the Department of Human Services, through a cost report process. Those rates, as you look at the spectrum of staff from high school level staff in residential facilities to bachelor's prepared to master's prepared, a rate is established, and it just does not afford for the ability to compete, I think, against a Colorado system that certainly uses a different funding mechanism for their human services. On the Medicare side, that is really established through regional programs in Medicare. I will note that mental health historically has seen a disparity in reimbursement, meaning that there's been a 50% copay applied to those under Medicare that would seek reimbursement. In other words, Medicare would cover 50% of those costs versus traditional primary care where that would be covered at 80%.
Senator Merchant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question on maybe more of a comment and then a question at the end. I think you all have done a great job of laying out that there would be some upfront costs, and I'm surprised that I know $475,000 is a lot of money, but the upfront cost is very minimal compared to the long-lasting effects and the benefits that we could gain by doing this and the cost-saving measures down the road by bringing it more to community-based and prevention mode and keeping people more healthy mentally and reduce our incarceration rates, all of that. As we look in the future, this is the budget for 2010, but how much will it cost ongoing after that per year? Maybe that's in this document, but I haven't had time to look
regions,
at it.
Please.
The board's budget request was for the continuing funds needed at full implementation of the program. And yes, you're right. The budget for the program is included in the materials I distributed. The $474,500 in the board's budget request is for the continuing funds needed once the program becomes fully operational. The first year, there would be no students, and the first year's cost would be somewhat lower in terms of the salaries and so on, because you don't need all the faculty members up front. You do need some faculty, and I will come back to your question on grants in a minute. The university is likely to have some one-time costs in terms of space renovation, new computers, new facilities, and so on. But the $475,000 is the continuing costs once the program is up and running. Okay. Maybe if I could, Mr. Chairman, let me speak to the question of the grants. The grants typically would be on a short-term basis. They're not permanent funds. In order to get this program up and running through the accreditation process, the university would need to hire somebody with sound knowledge of the accreditation process. This is not a job for somebody right out of graduate school. This is not something where you get a new PhD in social work and bring him or her in as an assistant professor. You need an experienced person, probably at the associate or professor level, I would guess, to get this program up and running. Even if this were in the governor's budget, we knew it was going to be a fast process. I think you're unlikely to attract a distinguished person to lead the program through accreditation if all you had is temporary funding through a grant.
Yes,
I think this question is aimed at my friend Terry Dosh. And it's probably more of a conceptual question than anything. I mean, I have to ask every time I hear about shortage of healthcare workers, which I know our hospitals and healthcare systems are seeking to address, and every time I hear presentations like we've heard this morning, I ask myself, why is the bicycle broken? Why can't we get the number of people that apparently we need? And so my first question would be to you, Terry. Goodness sakes, my simple economics training tells me that if we have a shortage, then why don't we double the price? So we have a shortage of social workers. Why don't we double the pay? My guess is that would take care of our shortage of social workers.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please.
Terry Dosh, Council on Mental Health Centers. We certainly have to stay within the constraints of the ability to support that payroll through what we collect for services, Senator Dempster. right now, you know, I would observe to you, and we've been working with the Department of Human Services prospectively on this for some time and seeking to work with them to improve budget, to support the demand that we're seeing, but also to improve the rate that we're receiving for the services that we provide to actually cover costs. Right now, we're operating under a scenario where the rates that we get typically don't cover the full costs of delivering the services in the first place. And so we have that restriction right up front economically that restricts our ability to track by payroll.
So, Mr. Chair, so the bicycle is broken because we have a fixed price environment that either Medicare or Medicaid says we're only going to pay you this much. And so that means that we say to our masters of social workers that we can only pay you this much. And so we underpay them. And as a result, we have this shortage.
Mr. Chairman, yes, Senator Dempster, in my view, you know, that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing that you can't pay excellent employees for building Buicks if you can only charge so much for the Buick.
So then what this conversation is about, that since that bicycle is broken and there's nothing, there's little or nothing that we can do to fix it, then what we're talking about doing is increasing our public costs by subsidizing or increasing the supply of masters of social workers that we would have, and that's our process of attempting to fix this broken bicycle.
Mr. Chairman, Terry Dash again, I think it's a little more complicated than that alone. I don't think the economic analysis fully takes into account the actual need to have more social workers across the board. I don't think it's just economically fostered. Having the program locally, I think, is a big answer to meeting that demand need too. We've used that as an approach for virtually all of our other health professions from physicians on down. And we've recognized the value of being able to actually grow our own. And that's a huge part of this equation also. And I would also point out that the community health centers that I represent are very unique practices. The clients that we serve have tremendous need. So besides that, you know, we're in addition challenged to take the mastered social worker that might be coming out of the academic setting and then acclimate them to the sort of service environment that we have with the complexity of the care that we provide in the models that we use. For example, you know, we don't have people walking into clinics as you would go to see your family doctor most of the time. Yes, they do come into our centers for counseling and assistance and follow-up, but we go to them. The service areas that you heard discussed today, virtually every county in South Dakota is in one of these catchment areas. And, you know, what we do is we have a clinic without walls. We send our people to their communities where they reside and meet with them in their homes and serve them there. That's how we can get the services to the people in the really rural areas. And that's how we can deal with them outside of the institutional settings. So all of these things come together. I acknowledge that there's the economic component that you're describing, but I think there's also just plain old good fashioned. We need to grow our own. We need to place a greater degree of emphasis on opportunities that compel people to get into the profession in the first place.
Senator Dempster, did you have a follow-up?
A thoughtful man, thoughtful answers. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Gerstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just following up on Senator Dempster's, I think, astute remarks, and Terry, you might have to come back up again, but it seems to me, what is there to say? I mean, the growing your own is a good idea. I mean, and Good Samaritan has tried that with their CNAs. It's not really produced the numbers that they wanted. And I'm fearful that, you know, growing our own, which is a huge expense, ongoing every year, and it's probably only going to go up, you know, getting our own program up and running and getting excellent professors and so on. What's to say that there won't be attrition of those students who are in those programs? I mean, the basic underlying problem, I think, is the salary level, which is probably why we're having a lot of trouble getting social workers here. And I do not dispute the need. The need is humongous. But I see it's a salary level, and I don't know that growing our own is going to prevent attrition of those particular folks when they see that we're only going to pay, you know, this bare amount of money. And wouldn't we be better off, as Senator Dempster suggested, upping the salary to compete with other states instead of having our own program duplicating, which is what is going on in an excellent way in the states around us?
Well, thank you for the Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question, Senator Drewstedt. I agree with you completely. I think this is a complicated matter, and complicated matters require solutions with components in various domains. And I acknowledge that finding a way to pay people well for the services they provide is a key component into not only attracting but holding folks. To reiterate what I said before, too, I think that I'm really eager to see a program, if it were to be established like this, turn into a distant learning program so that that growing your own becomes even more applicable, and we can actually invest in our employees by helping them reach that higher level of credentialing as well. But I couldn't agree with you more, but in my experience, you know, I believe that, you know, having access to a supply is also an important part of the solution to the shortage issues that we have.
Thank you very much. If there are no further questions, I'd close to questions and move to committee discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dempster.
I think, though this be an imperfect solution, I guess we live in an imperfect world, and as such, I would move that we move this, or that that we send this to the Appropriations Committee.
And we will do that, but I think we'll want an advisory position. I was asked if
with the due pass recommendation.
You move a due pass recommendation. And there's a second by Senator Drewstedt. Yes.
I'd move that we refer this to the Appropriations Committee.
Without recommendation?
Without recommendation.
Okay, there's now a substitute motion that we simply send it to the Appropriations Committee with no recommendation. Is there a second to that motion? Is there a second?
Yep.
Second by Gant. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Secretary, call the roll.
Dempster?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Drewstedt?
No.
Merchant?
No.
Miles?
No.
Hansen?
Aye.
Adelstein?
No.
Mr. Chairman, there were three ayes and four nays.
Therefore, the substitute motion fails. We're back to the original motion to send it to Appropriations with a recommendation to do pass. Is there any discussion on that motion? Hearing none.
Just a point of order, maybe for Jackie. Jackie, since this isn't final disposition, or is it? Roll call or voice vote.
It's not final disposition, but it is final disposition.
For the committee, okay, thank you.
The Secretary will call the roll on the original motion, which is to refer this to the Appropriation Committee with a recommendation of due pass. Secretary, call the roll.
Dempster?
Aye.
Gant?
No.
Drewstedt?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Miles?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Adelstein?
Aye. The motion having carried with a majority, this will be recommended to the Appropriations Committee with the attachments and the recommendation of due pass. Thank you all very much for coming. We'll now hear testimony on Senate Bill 76 to require background investigation for certain optometrist licensees and applicants. Are there proponents of this bill, Senate Bill 76, please?
Good
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. My name is Tom Hansen, Senator from District 22 in Huron, and I'm here to ask for favorable consideration on this Senate Bill 76. We have great confidence in the health care providers of America. We have long been able to rely on their self-appraisal when making applications for license in the field of their training. However, we also recognize that there is a very small minority who take pleasure in breaking the rules. It is of special concern that we that when this deception takes place, that there's someone seeking to serve as a healthcare provider. This bill deals with the section of the code dealing with licensing of the practice of optometry. It simply asks for a background check for anyone applying for licensure as an optometrist. The legislation is brought at the request of the Board of Examiners of Optometry and is similar to legislation that passed 2 years ago at the request of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. In Section 2, there's a new subsection identified as Subsection 7 that allows for the revocation of a license of someone who's subject to disciplinary action if that person fails to cooperate with a criminal background investigation if required by the board. There are others who are directly associated with the practice of optometry, and so I will stand down, and I will be happy to answer to questions if need be.
Thank you very much, Senator. Are there other proponents of Senate Bill 76?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Bob Ryder. I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Optometric Society. I want to thank Senator Hansen for his remarks. He frankly covered quite well the impact of this bill. It is not a far-reaching bill. It's fairly narrow in its reach, but I would say that it's an important bill. And it arose really from discussions within the industry. Senator Hansen indicated that the board was promoting it. The board's attorney is here. I think they generally support the bill, too, and it did originate from discussions between the Board of Optometric Examiners and the Society. So it is just very clear. It allows for a background investigation, criminal background investigation. In advance of the legislative session, we drafted the bill along the lines of the chiropractic bill and the nursing bill. We provided a copy to the Attorney General's office. Mr. McGuigan from the Attorney General's office is here today. He can certainly speak for himself, but the impression I was left with was that it, because it was really just parroted those other bills, that it was sufficient to pass the inspection of the Attorney General's office and likely to be approved by the Department of Justice, because this would require the Department of Justice to be involved as well. The applicant has to pay the fee. So there is no expense directly on the state. The applicant, I think, in the chiropractic test pays about $40, and so that's what we anticipate. There's really not a broad number of applicants that we receive each year. I think in the past 5 years, the highest number we've had is 18. The smallest number is 6. So there's not a lot of optometrists seeking licensure and in South Dakota on an annual basis, but this would ensure in a proactive manner rather than a reactive manner that we respond to issues that are important to the consumers, because ultimately the people who benefit from this, not the optometrists, but are the customers, or more particularly the patients of the optometrists. So we think it's a good consumer protection bill. As Senator Hansen indicated, it is consistent with public policy, as this legislature has already adopted, dealing with nursing and chiropractic. So we support it and ask for your favorable support.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ryder. Are there any further proponents of this bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Naomi Cromwell, and as Mr. Ryder and Senator Hansen indicated, I'm counsel for the South Dakota Board of Examiners in Optometry. The Board of Optometry does support this bill. We believe it will provide an enhancement to the board's ability to provide consumer protection in the state of South Dakota, and we do support its passage. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further proponents of Senate Bill 76? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 76? Are there any opponents to Senate Bill 76? Seeing none, we will close the witness testimony to questions of the committee. Seeing none, the committee will move to a motion to take action on Senate Bill 76.
To pass, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dempster is seconded by Senator Merchant. Any discussion on this do pass? Hearing none, the secretary will call the roll, and in the vote will be taken.
Dempster?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Gerstad?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Miles?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Consent, Mr. Chair?
Senator Dempster moves to consent. Is there a second?
Second.
And is there any objection to that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Hearing none, it goes to consent. Is there any further business to come before this committee today?
Move adjournment.
Yes.
Move adjourn.
Senator Denton moved to, and Senator Miles to second the motion to adjourn. We stand, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We stand adjourned.